This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Cincinnati police say the number of shootings overall is 7% lower than this time last year, but the number of juvenile shooting victims is the highest the city has seen in at least the past 10 years. Just a few weeks ago, a shooting that happened in Cincinnati's West End neighborhood killed an 11-year-old boy and injured an adult and four other children. Today, we're going to talk about what's behind these numbers and how communities are responding. Joining me now are Cincinnati Children's pediatric surgeon and director of trauma services, Dr. Mira Kodigal. Welcome, Dr. Kodigal.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Cincinnati Works Phoenix Outreach and Mentoring Coordinator, Mitch Morris. Thanks for being here, Mitch.
Hey, hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
And Cincinnati Inquirer breaking news reporter, Cameron Knight. Welcome back, Cameron.
Thank you.
Cincinnati Children's is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Do you have questions or comments about this increase in the number of juvenile victims of gun violence? You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or by emailing talk@wvxu.org. Cameron, as I mentioned, a record number of children have been victims of gun violence in Cincinnati this year, the highest number in at least a decade. We have a little bit of audio that can explain that.
Our juvenile shooting victim numbers are the highest we've seen. I looked back 10 years, and it's the highest number of shooting victims that we've had in those 10 years. This is a record-breaking, unfortunately, involvement.
Cameron, walk us through those numbers. How many children and teens have been victims this year?
So I have been focusing more on the teenage victims. It is a record number of both juveniles and teens. I've found that there have the most number of teens, and when I say teens, I mean 13 to 17 years old. The highest number previously on record was in 2009 with 50, and we're approaching 60 at this point in this year. And when we say on record, I think it's important to note that there is a comprehensive database of shooting victims, locations, all of that, that dates back to 2008. And when we talk about on record, we mean prior to 2008, the data is just not easily available. So we can't really go back further than that.
And this is while shootings overall are down. Cameron, any idea why there are so many juvenile victims?
There's a few things at play. We've heard about the Kia thefts, which predominantly seems to be an activity young people are taking part in. They're able to, that allows them to move around the city a lot quicker. If you're in a stolen car versus on a bus or on foot, you can obviously go places. You can travel to other neighborhoods where people might not be as friendly. You can find your rivals. There's all sorts of reasons that play into the car theft thing. That number is also record high, like way blowing out of the water record highs with the Kia and Hyundai thefts. The second thing that plays into it is sort of these conflicts between neighborhood groups. Nobody wants to call them gangs. Some people might call them gangs, but other people wouldn't. They don't form the typical hierarchy that a lot of people have in their head when they think of a gang. These are kids that grew up together, grew up in neighborhoods together. They're friends. They're each other's family. And those kind of feuds between these rivaling groups seem to be fueling a lot of this.
Mitch, Cincinnati's certainly not alone in this. Gun-related injuries were the leading cause of death for children and adolescents in the U.S. in both 2020 and 2021. That's according to researchers that analyzed CDC data. What are the factors that you think are feeding into this crisis?
Well, Mr. Knight, he mentioned some of the things. But if I can, I want to speak about, you said shootings are down 7% in the city. And that is something very great that I think we need to speak about.
Okay.
It took a whole lot in order for us to get that to where it is now. So that need to be celebrated with law enforcement, with the people that do the trauma work up at the hospitals. You know, so although it's a lot of bad stuff going on with the kids right now, but we need to congratulate the people that's been out here that's fighting that fight. That's an accomplishment. So now with the youth, the thing, what I see, this is Mitch Moore speaking, the fact that that same type of resource that we use to get their shootings down to the 7%, we just need to stay laser focused on the youth, with the trauma people, with the schools, with the fire department, with the police department. Everybody just be on page one and address that issue. It's a lot of guns getting in the wrong people's hands out there. So I think city council is working on something right now as we speak to try to do something to try to help this thing out. And I'm looking and hoping that this thing here works. So we just gonna need to stay focused and stay encouraged. And I have to congratulate the folks that put all this hard work in to getting the shooting down to where they're at with the 7%.
Yeah, that's a really important point you raised. We need to celebrate where there are some victories here. But when you have so many children and young people being injured and sometimes killed by these guns, do you have any other thoughts about why? I mean, is it just that there are more guns in circulation? Or are kids getting to them easier? What are you seeing in the work that you do?
It's a lot of guns out there in the streets, and the guns are getting in the wrong people's hands. So, you know what, as I think back, I could go back. We've been losing youth to gun violence. I could mention a few of them some years back. And so it'll flare up. People get real upset and real want to do things about it, and nothing really solid to address these youth with these guns. So as of now, what I'm asking is that let's be laser focused. As if there's a cancer in your body, you get laser focused on that and you get rid of it. So I remember a youth, Price Hill. When we got there, it was tragic. You know, I think he was a baby. Was he about 11 years old? We had an 18-month-old down on Pendleton. It was tragic. You know, we had a couple youth up in Avondale. So this goes back some time now. So we just need to just say, okay, look, we're going to do something solid and address it. You got all the right people in place in the city of Cincinnati, from the police to the city council to the council. We got the right people at the table right now. Let's come together, get focused on what we need to address these kids in the schools, the boys' clubs, the Facebooks, and let's address this issue.
Dr. Kodigal, what kinds of gun-related injuries are you seeing at Cincinnati Children's? What are you seeing and treating, and how often are you seeing them these days?
As you mentioned, you know, we have seen across the country a rise in gun violence. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, in 2020, it became the leading cause of death for kids across the country. And we have seen that mirrored in our daily practice at the hospitals, unfortunately, both here and across the street at our adult counterpart at the University of Cincinnati, where we're seeing, you know, every week we see kids that are coming into the emergency room as a result of significant firearm related injuries. And we know that that has a significant impact both on that individual, but also on their family and their community as they struggle to deal with the ability to keep kids safe across our city.
Earlier this month, as we talked about earlier on the program, an 11-year-old boy died. Five others were injured in a shooting in the West End neighborhood. Mayor Aftab Pureval spoke with reporters after the shooting.
They were a group of kids playing outside of their house when a madman came by and fired 22 rounds into a group of kids.
The boy's father also spoke out.
When would this stop? Would this ever stop? Like, how many people have to bury their kids, their babies, their loved ones? Like, look at his mother. Look at me. I mean, you're not going to realize it until someone happened to your family, until it happens to you. I'm just asking anybody that know anything to come forward, please. Just please come forward. We're begging.
Mitch, you mentioned this. We've seen these tragic incidents in other parts of our city. How unusual is it to have an 11-year-old boy, someone so young, be a victim of this kind of crime?
It's horrible. And the trauma doctor mentioned about the ripple effect of how it affects the family, the community, the teachers. It affects everyone. So we have to get in safety mode and get a bit nosy, get in our kids' rooms. You know, your kids start hanging with the wrong type friends, need to check and see what's going on. It's no one thing that we could do to try to turn this thing around. But the young man said, enough is enough, and we have to really take a serious look at this and stand for something. Because I've been in many kitchens and living rooms and front porches to talk to these parents after they lost a loved one to gun violence. And all some of the ones I just mentioned to you, I still think about some of them. You know, I remember up in Mount Auburn, we had a 6-year-old and we had a 9-year-old girl shot. We marched up there to try to bring awareness to the community that we're here and we got you and we with you and we understand. So if we piggyback off that and be able to bring resources into the community and knock on doors, then we just might be able to make a difference. And I have to keep speaking about these hospitals. Children's are, you know, they are doing immaculate work up there. I can tell you over the years where hot summer night, maybe 12 people get shot. You know, it's over 300-some people up there on Goodman Avenue because they're concerned about their loved ones. And not one of those people died that night. They saved them all, the hospital said. So it's a lot of things that can be commended from these things. It's just a matter of us getting it together and focus, laser focus on this, what's happening in our community.
Cameron, where are all these guns coming from? Are they stolen guns for the most part? Do we have any idea?
Yeah, we don't. It's hard to say, but there have been some reports from police. The Cincinnati Police Department gave a report to City Council recently where they spoke about how a lot of the guns are coming from cars, just people who are leaving their cars unlocked or are leaving guns in their cars. That may kind of overlap with this increase in car thefts. But it seems like they said a lot of these guns are coming from inside vehicles. So thefts from vehicles, maybe not the whole car gets stolen, but the car gets broken into and the guns are there. I also wanted to mention, too, just to piggyback on what Mitch said about the ripple effect. I interviewed a girl a few years back in a Hawaiian Terrace, I believe, who was an upstanding student, never got in trouble. She was just hanging out in front of her house. There was a shooting. A round skipped up off the ground and hit her in the chin. And this was several years ago. This was before the big spike when everyone started to notice this issue. And I interviewed her, and she was just a normal student at Aiken. Just not anybody that you would think had experienced the amount of trauma she'd experienced. And I asked her how many of her friends had been shot and how many funerals she had gone to. And she was a high school student and she didn't know the number because it was so high. She'd lost count of how many people. And when you have that happening in neighborhoods, I think that speaks a lot to this is a student, a young person with a mom who's there, with a good school, a lot of support around her. But what happens to the kid that doesn't have all that and has all that trauma on top of it? That is a question that I think is at the root of some of this.
Yeah. We did get a call from Sam. Sam asks, he didn't want to go on the air, but he asks, how are we holding parents responsible? I guess that assumes that parents are, you know, or that some of these young people are committing the crimes or young people are in the wrong place at the wrong time. Mitch, do you think there's more that we should be doing to hold parents responsible or hold other people responsible? Are, you know, is there something about something more that politicians should be doing, something more that state lawmakers should be doing in terms of gun laws? Who, Mitch, do you feel like we need to be holding responsible for all this?
Well, I'm not going to say as much as being responsible because I've seen situations where it's been a good kid come from a good family and get caught up and end up doing something, making a bad decision with a gun. And on the same token, I've seen good families raise their child and the child be doing all the good things and get hit with a stray bullet. It's not necessary that they have to be doing something. So if I had to sit here to say right now, and I say this, that I think we got the right city manager in office. I think we got the right city council. And I think everybody working hard as they can to turn this thing around. If anybody had the one thing that they could do to do something about it, I do believe that they would do that. So my thing is just to continue to work together. And everybody's working hard to try to take care of their family and take care of the other folks out here that's misunderstood and confused right now. So let's just stay to the grind and continue trying to do whatever you could do to try to help some of these young people that's making these bad decisions. Yeah.
Dr. Kodagal, how big was this problem locally prior to the pandemic? Did you see a surge in the number of young children and adolescents who were injured by gun violence with the pandemic? How has it changed over time?
Absolutely. I think we saw both an increase in the pandemic, but we've continued to see that rise even after the height of the pandemic. And so I think it is a reflection both of mental health crises that we see across across the country. But also, I think important to acknowledge, and both Mitch and Cameron were referring to this, that the environment in which kids are being raised, the disadvantage, the impact of deprivation and poverty, the early childhood adverse events and toxic stress, those are things that impact the development of the brains of kids over time and can contribute to some of this cyclical violence. And I think we have to acknowledge that those structural pieces as a result of structural racism and others have a long-term impact on kids throughout our communities.
Dr. Kodagal, what do you think in terms of accountability? We were talking, Mitch was just talking about how, good parents and good kids can get caught up in this. Kids can make mistakes that change or can end their lives. When you're dealing with this at the hospital day in and day out, what do you think about in terms of accountability? And do you think there's an issue with access to guns, that the kids can just get access to guns too easily?
I mean, I think we know that this is a complex problem that requires multidisciplinary and multifaceted approaches. And I don't think that any single one approach is going to solve this problem in isolation. Access to weapons definitely is a challenge. And we talk about safe storage and gun safety, but that challenge, that approach is only going to work in certain contexts. And I think we need to recognize the need for mental health interventions. I think we need to recognize the importance of neighborhood transformation, and also that kids learn how to resolve conflict in childhood, and they master those skills in adolescence. And so if we are able to model nonviolent conflict resolution and able to provide kids with violence intervention opportunities to break the cycles of victimization and retaliation, then we miss an opportunity to sort of turn this around. And I think that requires really being present in communities, as both Mitch and Cameron have talked about. Really, we know that the people who are closest to the problems are closest to the solutions. And so how do we partner with communities to take a trauma-informed lens and really work with kids and families to understand the impacts of this community-level violence that it's having on each of them every day by what they see around them?
Cameron, you had an in-depth examination of how law enforcement tied several guns to multiple crimes. It's a very in-depth story. I'd encourage our listeners to check it out on Cincinnati.com. Can you explain briefly how they do that and how law enforcement agencies are working together to try to really reduce this gun violence?
Yeah, a few years back, actually during the pandemic, the city launched a gun task force, which was something they've had before. And that sort of morphed into this thing called the Crime Gun Intelligence Center, which is a partnership between the ATF and the Cincinnati Police Department. And they're using as much technology as they can leverage to link guns together. The basic thing that I think most people might not realize is happening is that when you shoot a gun, a semi-automatic pistol, which is the most common gun used in these kind of crimes, it leaves a shell casing behind. It's the piece of brass that spits out the side of the gun. And they are able to, they collect them all over the city all the time, and they're able to match shell casings between crimes. So they can look at a shell casing that was found in Over the Rhine, and they can say, oh, we're over here in Westwood now, and these shell casings came from the same gun. They can say that. And using that and all the other technology that you can imagine with mapping and everything else, they can track where guns are being used before they even have the gun in their hand. And then once they get the gun in their hand, they can say, oh, this gun was used in X number of things on these dates and everything.
Yeah.
So they were able to track that, and they were essentially, through one shooting that happened in Oakley a few years back, it led them on this kind of crazy path to this teen, like younger group of kids who had been responsible for a lot of shootings, including one teen who's kind of made the news several times now, named Michael Medeiros, who's charged in three separate homicides. And they're using this sort of shell casing fingerprint data along with DNA and fingerprints and all the other police tools that you can think of to kind of create this map of gun violence throughout the city. Which seems to, they've had hundreds and hundreds of arrests and things out of this unit in the past few years. And it seems to be going pretty well, according to them.
Yeah. So. Mitch, there's the part that law enforcement is working on, but what are communities doing to respond to this? You know, Dr. Kodagal was talking about all the different factors that come into play. How do you see communities responding and really working to try to reduce this problem?
Yeah, community police partnership is real big in our city. What we mean by that is police and community working together to try to get to the bottom of some of these shootings. So if you got the community having a good relationship with the police, then we could get a good product from that. So what we do is we have a lot of different events in some of these communities, and we invite law enforcement, and law enforcement, they come out, and they just don't stand around in a security matter. They get involved with the youth and with the kids. So if they're playing flag football or playing basketball, that way they get a chance to know them before the crisis. So if it's a crisis in their neighborhood, then usually when the police come in, everybody pulling down their shades and, you know, getting out the way. But now after the police done built their relationship with the youth and the community, the kids run to them for safety and understanding. So that's something real big in our city, community police partnership, and it's really been going real well.
Yeah. So much more to talk about here, but we've got to end it now. I've been talking with Cincinnati Children's pediatric surgeon and director of trauma services, Dr. Mira Kodagal, Cincinnati Works Phoenix Outreach and Mentoring Coordinator Mitch Morris, and Cincinnati Inquirer breaking news reporter Cameron Knight. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.